His other top stories, 3 Yemeni civilians are killed and 7 others injured in a Saudi airstrike in the east of Hodeida province. The European Environment Agency says fine particle air pollution accounts for more than 300,000 premature deaths on the continent every year. And Austria is set to begin a lockdown for people not vaccinated against COVID-19, the first country in the EU, as it is fighting a record surge in cases. Those were the top story. Welcome. No end in sight to Saudi Arabia's military aggression against neighboring Yemen. Yemeni media say Saudi warplanes targeted an area east of city of Hayes in Hodeida province, killing 3 civilians and injuring 7 others. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on Yemen in March of 2015. Since then, tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have lost their lives, and millions have been displaced. Years-long aggression has also targeted the country's infrastructure, leaving the Yemeni people in abject misery. The United Nations has called the situation in Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. On that recent attack, I'm going to bring in Hussein Al-Bukhaiti. He's a Yemeni activist and political commentator, to enlighten us with his comments, perhaps, you know, basically about Hussein, the latest spate of violence, you know, which has led to these 3 deaths at the hands of the Saudi forces, as well as the overall situation as you see it, please.
Just in the last few hours, Saudi have conducted several airstrikes on Hayes city. Hayes city is south of Hodeida, to the north of Mocha Port, and this latest attack has killed and injured the 10 Yemeni civilians. And this is actually not the first attack. Just 2 days ago, Saudi double type airstrike have targeted the same area, killing 8 civilians. And on Saturday, they have targeted an area in Shabwa, killing 4 civilians. And just 3 hours ago, Saudi artillery shells on Saada province have killed 2 civilians, injuring other civilians, including 2 children. They show you that the Saudi actually is not stopping with this with this aggression against Yemen. They keep targeting Yemeni civilians, and we see on the other hand that United States keeps selling arms to Saudi. They keep signing new agreements for Saudi to buy weapons from the United States and as well from other countries like the UK. And I think there is no peace for Yemenis as long as the Saudi is not stopping this war. And I'm sure that this latest airstrike resulted in a huge attack against Saudi and as well United Arab Emirates, because it's highly believed that this latest strike in Hayes that has the last 3 hours that have killed and injured 7 civilians is conducted by United Arab fighter jets.
And you mentioned the issue of arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Hussein, how do you comment on that? Or tell me, how has this news been received within Yemen where you are?
Actually, here in Yemen, when we hear this Biden election campaign and election statement, here in Yemen, they believe that Biden is exactly similar to Trump and is exactly similar to Obama. We remember that Obama was handed the peace, the Nobel Peace Prize. And we remember that the war has started actually during Obama administration. And as well, Obama has struck the largest arms deal with Saudi Arabia in U.S. history. And as well, Trump have done the same. And now we see Biden. So it doesn't matter for Yemenis, and they know that from the beginning. It doesn't matter what kind of administration is in the United States. United States' interest is to keep supporting tyrant in our area, keep supporting Saudi Arabia, because they describe Saudi as a milking cow. That's why you have always to feed that cow with weapons, and it will provide you with that milk, as Trump has explained it at once. And actually, the latest arms deals, it's exposed. It's totally exposed the Biden administration, that it doesn't matter with all this attack and killing that the Saudi is conducting in Yemen. They keep selling weapons. But there is another weapon that actually Biden administration has used more than any other U.S. administration, which is the blockade. Since Biden has actually become a president, Saudi has tightened its blockade on Yemen. We have the longest fuel shortages in Yemen history, and as well the longest since the war began. It started since Biden has took place as president until now. Saudi allowed only fuel ship. Fuel price increased from 5,000 Yemeni riyal or 6,000 Yemeni riyal to 13,000 Yemeni riyal for almost now 10 months. And this did not happen actually during Obama administration or Trump administration. It's actually during Biden, because they believe that Biden is trying, while he's selling weapons to Saudi, he's trying to use the Yemeni crisis, to use the blockade against Yemeni civilians. But I believe that now the upper hand is for Yemeni army, and I believe that Sana'a, as many here in Yemen believe, Sana'a bear responsibility for any civilian casualty caused by Saudi, because Sana'a forces can actually target Saudis, and they can stop this war in a matter of days if they just take this decision.
Many, many thanks, Hussein Al-Bukhaiti, Yemeni activist and political commentator out of Sana'a. You have a very good morning there. Palestinians indefinitely detained by Israel without charge or trial often receive little media coverage. That forces them to go on prolonged hunger strikes to draw attention to their plight. Currently, there are five such Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails, doctors warning that one of them is on the brink of death. Earlier, we discussed that issue in our news review program with our guests.
And now it's time for this hour's news review. Several Palestinians on hunger strike in Israeli jails for their unjust detention are in dire condition. Now, the situation is particularly critical for one inmate. The doctors now are warning of his imminent death. Kayet Fasfus, 34 years old, has been refusing food for 122 days now. His doctors say he's developing symptoms of a blood clot, an early warning of the risk of sudden death. That's in addition to other health issues Kayet has, according to his brother. They include the loss of consciousness, a decrease in blood pressure, as well as kidney and heart problems. Kayet is among five Palestinians currently on hunger strike in protest of their indefinite detention by the Israeli regime without charge or trial. The practice is called administrative detention and is widely condemned as illegal. On Thursday, a Palestinian ended his prolonged hunger strike after Israeli authorities agreed to release him next February. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review. Out of Ramallah, Mana Kandil and Charlotte Cates from the Samadun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with me. Well, Mona, let's start it off with you and just bring us up to par, the latest situation for these five inmates, especially for Kayet Fasfus.
Well, yes, today we are speaking about five Palestinian prisoners are still going on with their open-ended hunger strike. Kayet Fasfus, this Palestinian prisoner who's being held under the so-called administrative detention without charge or trial, has started his open-ended hunger strike and has been refusing food for 123 days, according to Israeli doctors at the Barzilai Hospital, telling his brother that Al-Fasfus has been developing, let's say, symptoms suggesting clots in his body, and he's losing his consciousness. He's unable to move. There is also unable to see, problems in the sight, unable to speak. And the doctors suggested that he might face death at any time. That's why his brother, his family, are urging the international community, are urging the world to pressurize the Israeli regime to accept ending his illegal administrative detention, because only this would be allowing him to end his hunger strike. because from the first moment those Palestinian prisoners said they are taking this protest, protesting the administrative detention, refusing food until the Israeli regime either prosecute them or release them. So end the Israeli administrative detention. Only this would be giving them a green light to end their hunger strike.
Well, Charlotte, I mean, we look at this time and time again, these continual illegal detention, imprisonment by the Israeli regime without charging these prisoners, without having them go to trial. It is unbelievable that we don't hear more about what is going on. And these prisoners are basically on the edge of starvation now. And we just don't hear in the mainstream media or from these so-called governments that support human rights. We just don't hear very much about what is actually going on. What is it going to take, Charlotte, to get the word out more and to try to put pressure on that regime to at least change this policy in dealing with Palestinians and their detention?
Yes, and thank you for raising attention about this very important issue and about this complete miscarriage of justice that is taking place on a systematic and ongoing basis against the Palestinian people. There are around 500 Palestinians held right now without charge or trial out of nearly 5,000 Palestinian political prisoners overall in Israeli occupation prisons. And this system of administrative detention, while it certainly has been criticized and condemned repeatedly by UN experts and international law authorities, continues to take place with the full support and complicity of Western imperialist powers. Like, it's important to note that administrative detention was first brought to Palestine by the British colonial mandate, and then it was adopted by the Zionist regime thereafter, and it's been used systematically for decades upon decades upon decades to deprive Palestinian leaders, organizers, community members of their rights to freedom. And this is why it's so important for there to be grassroots community response from people around the world. This includes escalating the boycott of Israel and demanding international isolation of this apartheid state, of this systematically racist Zionist state that is involved not only in confiscating the land of the Palestinian people and dispossessing millions of Palestinians and excluding them from their homes, but on a daily basis engaging in night raids and attacks upon Palestinians and then locking them up behind bars and throwing them away the key and never saying when they might be released.
All right, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this news review. Out of Ramallah, Mona Kandu, and Charlotte Cates from the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. And thank you for staying with us on another program. Stay tuned, please.
Welcome back. The European Environment Agency says fine particle air pollution causes over 300,000 deaths every year on the continent. A report by the agency says premature deaths by the invisible killer have fallen 10% annually across Europe. But it says the fatalities recorded in 2019 could be cut in half if the air quality guidelines from the WHO were followed by EU members. The agency says air pollution remains the biggest environmental threat and is blamed for most premature deaths caused by heart disease and strokes. According to the WHO, air pollution causes 7 million premature deaths annually across the world. Austria has become the first European Union member to announce fresh COVID-19 restrictions for unvaccinated citizens amid a record spike in its daily infections.
We have decided today that from tomorrow at 12 a.m. on Monday, a lockdown will enter into force in Austria. It means movement restrictions for anyone older than 12. I must say we're not taking this step with a light heart, but unfortunately it is necessary.
The Chancellor said the unvaccinated people can only leave their homes for reasons like working or buying food. That would effectively put some 2 million people in lockdown as about 35% of the Austrian population remains unvaccinated. Following the announcement, people gathered outside the Chancellor's office in the capital Vienna to protest against the measure. The EU is once again turning into a hotbed for the COVID-19 outbreak. Several European nations have been posting higher figures over the past few weeks. And finally, a photo exhibition on the Arba'een pilgrimage has kicked off in Rome, showcasing the largest peaceful gathering in the world. It is the first time that such an initiative takes place in Italy, Max Civili reports.
A two-day photographic and film exhibition on the annual pilgrimage of Arba'een began in the Italian capital on Saturday. Arba'een marks the 40th day of the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Imam of Shia Muslims. It is commemorated annually through a march being the biggest in the world and known as Arba'een Pilgrimage from different countries to Karbala and holding ceremonies in the Iraqi city. The photo exhibition, organized by the Imam Mehdi Islamic Association and the NGO Arba'een Travelogue, showcases a selection of photos from the world's largest gathering in late September this year. The main focus of the initiative is global justice.
We do our best to bring the message of Arba'een to Europe, to every country, to every city, to every one of those people, and say the truth that Arba'een is follow the global peace, global justice. And global justice, global peace, global empathy is what we're missing now.
There is an amazing atmosphere in Karbala. Iraqi people welcomed us the best way they could. The first time I went there, Saddam Hussein had just been removed. I traveled all the way from Iran to the Holy Shrine. It was an unforgettable experience.
Despite the COVID-19 pandemic, hundreds of thousands of Shia Muslim pilgrims converged on Karbala in late September to commemorate the end of the 40-day mourning period for the death of Imam Hussein.
People at the photo exhibition say Arba'een should be seen as a model for our societies, one in which each and every one of us has a role, irrespective of our nationality, financial status, and ethnic or religious background.
I think it would be really nice to take it as a model because you see that everything is there organized by people who are doing their best without any rules, without any fines, without any pushing from the outside. So it can be implemented to our daily life. And hopefully I would say that the people could be inspired by it and try to have it in their daily life as much as possible.
Ciò che avviene durante la marcia del 40esimo.
What happens during the Arba'een can inspire our societies. Generosity, sacrifice, selflessness, these are values that better our societies, and that's what we should all aim at.
Some 14 million worshippers attended the Arba'een in 2019. Max Civili, Rome.
Well, that's it for me for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
The unexpected onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and the shift of workspace have led to a rapid increase in cyber attacks across the world. According to Checkpoint Research, the number of ransomware assaults worldwide increased by 102% in 2021. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by the staff reporter of UKTN website. This article is published under the heading Cyber Budgets of UK Enterprises Shrank During COVID-19 Pandemic, Report Shows. Stay tuned for more. the unexpected onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and the shift of workspace have led to a rapid increase in cyber attacks across the world. According to Checkpoint Research, the number of ransomware assaults worldwide increased by 102% in 2021. Recently, SRM, London-based cybersecurity risk and intelligence consultancy company, conducted research on the cyber budgets of UK enterprises. According to the findings, the cyber budgets of UK enterprises actually shrank during the pandemic. This left cyber spending stagnating at an average of around £18 million, approximately $24.9 million, for the 2021 financial year. This is despite the fact that 79% reported having suffered a major cyber incident. Of this group, the majority, about 73%, had experienced an incident in the past 3 years. The report says that over half, that is 54% of organizations, either hit pause or decreased their cyber budgets during the pandemic. However, now IT leaders expect to increase their cyber budget by an average of 7.4% in the next 12 months, taking the average budget to £19.4 million. But taking into account inflation, which is currently 3%, this still may not be enough to make up for the lost time during the pandemic, says the report. If this trend continues, a cyber spending deficit will emerge that makes businesses more vulnerable to cyber incidents as attacks become more frequent and more sophisticated, says the report. According to the findings, the problem is compounded by a lack of confidence among decision makers in how they spend their cyber budgets. Around 40% said their organization needed a better understanding of how to prioritize areas for cyber investment. Half, that is 50%, reported they had a cyber strategy but had not been able to fully implement it. Businesses need to act now to lock in their cyber spending for next year, said Jamie Smith, head of cybersecurity at SRM. The readiness with which we saw businesses pull back their budgets during the pandemic is concerning. Next year's cyber budgets cannot be future-proofed against all forms of disruption, but their trends business leaders should watch closely. A major one is the rising cost of cyber insurance. Premiums are going up. This is because cyber attacks are becoming more frequent. What's more, insurers are looking to reduce the risk they take on when they provide cyber policies. As a result, insurers want companies to prove how cyber resilient they are before providing cover. UK cyber budgets shrunk at a time when the cost of cybercrime and frequency of attacks is increasing at an alarming rate. The average immediate damage of a cyber incident is in the region of £1.3 million. But the secondary costs, like higher insurance premiums and recovery services, can be more than double this. Businesses have been failing to keep pace. And if they don't commit to strategic investment in their cybersecurity, they risk serious financial and reputational damage.
food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us contemplate on a gem of an advice from the Holy Prophet's 11th infallible successor, Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, whose blessed birthday anniversary we're celebrating today. Know that coyness has a certain extent, and if it is exceeded, it shall turn to weakness. Generosity has a certain extent, and if it is exceeded, it shall be extravagance. Economy has a certain extent, and if it is exceeded, it shall be stinginess. And courage has a certain extent, and if it is exceeded, it shall be recklessness.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are welcome to your program For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. In this episode, we are going to talk about akhlaq in life or ethics in life. Of course, the word akhlaq has been translated differently by different scholars. Generally speaking, the word akhlaq is the practice of virtue, morality and manners in Islamic theology. The word akhlaq is most commonly translated as disposition, nature, temper, and it has also been translated as ethics, morals or manners. And obviously a person with a good akhlaq or with a good morality is a person who has good manners. So he behaves well and he is known as a good character in society. Now, some of you might be interested in understanding the word akhlaq, in understanding the root, of course, whether the word akhlaq is the plural form or the singular form. I should tell you that the word akhlaq is the plural of the word khulq, which means disposition. Now, disposition actually is faculty of the soul. Generally, we use the word malaka to describe a trait of the soul. So Disposition is actually a faculty of the soul which unconsciously inspires activities. Now, as I said, we usually use the word malaka in Arabic or in Farsi. So the word malaka comes into, not the word malaka, but the malaka itself actually comes into existence through repetitive practice. And of course, it's not destroyed easily. Once the malaka is established, once this faculty of the soul is established, then it does not fade away. Now, a particular faculty of the soul or a particular malaka may appear because of a habit formed by continual repetition of certain acts, which obviously leads to a certain disposition. What is very important is the repetition of certain acts, which ultimately or finally leads to a certain disposition.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Malaka actually is formed through practice and conscious effort. Practice and conscious effort. If the practice and conscious effort are persistent, they will eventually produce a disposition. Now, disposition is not created overnight, you see. If you want to, for example, be a pious person, you should have the faculty, you should have the disposition, and that disposition is not created overnight. It comes into existence by and by, and with the passage of time, provided that obviously the person has the determination and the resolve to change himself and to make himself better. You know, man is a free agent. He exercises free will. He has the volition to change himself because he is not actually living a life led by instincts. No, he is a free agent and he exercises free will. He exercises free will. So man changes his life, his habit and manners by making conscious efforts. When he is making efforts to change himself, he is doing it consciously. He knows in the back of his mind that he is trying to change himself. Sometimes, of course, a man's habit is formed by the environment in which he lives. Because if you put yourself in an environment which is either good or bad, so depending on the environment, sometimes the environment is good, sometimes it's bad. So it's the environment that shapes, of course, your character or the character of a child. Especially a child is more vulnerable and more susceptible to the environment or the setting in which a child lives, whether the environment is created by the family or it is the society that creates the environment. At the end of the day, it is the environment that shapes his character and his personality. Obviously, a person cannot escape the influence of the environment. Whether the environment is good or bad, it will have an impact on your conduct and on your behavior. Now, children and youngsters are more vulnerable. They are susceptible to the influence or to the impact of the environment. And environment has its impact on you willy-nilly, whether you want it or not. So it has its impact. Sometimes you make your own independent and conscious effort to change your life, to better it, to improve it, to live a better life. You, because you have the capacity to change it, you have the ability to change it. You have been gifted with the power, with the will, with the resolve to change your life, to make it better, to change your personality, and to live a life characterized by ethics, by morality, by goodness, and by moral values, of course.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
When we speak of man's capacity to change his dispositions, we do not mean he should destroy his instincts. We do not mean he should suppress his instincts or his, for example, desires. Of course, the desires are there, the instincts are there, and sometimes those instincts can actually overpower the individual. But living a life or changing one's position and the capacity to change one's dispositions, of course, does not mean that we should destroy our instincts. We should, of course, take care of those desires. We should take care of those instincts and make sure at the same time that they do not mislead us, that they do not lead us away from the right path. And because instincts can do this. The instincts, if they spiral out of control, they can actually lead a person out of the right path. So it is very much important that one should try to maintain moderation and not to go to extremes, and of course to control his instincts, and of course make at the same time deliberate and conscious efforts to change his life, to create a change, a positive change in his life. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family has been reported to have said, the most complete of believers in Iman, in terms of Iman, are those who are best in character. So, and of course, it has also been reported from Imam Hassan alayhi salatu wassalam, and this is the last hadith with which I would like to conclude this episode. Inna ahsan al-hasan al-khulq al-hasan, of course, which I roughly translate as the best of good things is good manners. With this, we come to the end of this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows. Allah knows.
The Light.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago. From a gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance. That's the story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses. Creating an optical illusion of a giant mural, the project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we are doing here is communal work with older neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which, for me as a muralist, is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
The birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth named Terry was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the sex of the baby.
Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mazer X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great, I think, market impact from this showcase, we successfully performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
A tigress belonging to the endangered Bengal species has given birth to four cubs at the Mexican Zoo, bringing joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts. The four were born in the San Jorge Park in the city of Ciudad Juarez on October 10th. Nearly a month on, they are in good health. That is good news, because usually when multiple cubs are born, not all of them survive. Zoo officials have not yet determined the sex of the newborn cubs. That is because their mother lets out a roar when the vets are nearby. Bengal tigers are endangered for two reasons: poaching and the destruction of their natural habitat. Here's what you can call killing two birds with one stone. Classic car lovers have gone on an exciting rally to see an erupting volcano. The event, organized by Beshbok Rallies, happened on a Saturday. Motorists taking part in the vintage rally had the unique opportunity to witness a volcano erupting ash and smoke. Most of the participants tried to get as close as they could to the volcano, but there were also those who chose to take other vehicles because they were afraid that their precious antique cars would be damaged.
Workers digging gas pipes in the Peruvian capital Lima have discovered a cemetery dating back 2 millennia. Archaeologists have recovered 6 bodies, including those of children. All of them were buried in a seated position. The site also yielded about 40 burial vessels. The findings are thought to belong to the culture known as White on Red, which settled on the central coast of Peru centuries ago during the pre-Hispanic era.
Often, it does not take much to bring about positive social change. In Johannesburg, a group of painters are creating artworks on the trolleys of street recyclers. Reason? To encourage bystanders to look up and notice the work recyclers, locally known as reclaimers, do in the community.
I like my work to have meaning, so when I get to paint and become a part of a project like this, it's great for me, you know? Because it's not every day we get to like do stuff like this, so yeah.
Up until now, they were just filthy-looking jumbo bags with recyclable waste wheeling along the streets. But thanks to graffiti artists who are giving them a makeover with bold and bright designs to help identify and protect the recyclers, artists say their goal is to build a relationship between neighborhood residents and waste pickers. The reclaimers roam around the city day and night, with some motorists even considering them a risk as the trolleys are not always visible. There are some 6,000 reclaimers in Johannesburg who make a living collecting, sorting, recycling garbage. It's a messy job, but they do it anyway. A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats, but here we're witness to the birth of forests as well, and that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
Carbon dioxide is one of the causes of global warming, but can we get rid of it to save our planet? A Swiss firm has come up with a novel idea to store CO2 underground and turn it into rocks. Company Climeworks has started operating the world's largest direct air carbon capture and storage plant called Okra in Iceland, located in Hershey. Okra is entirely run on renewable energy. It soaks carbon dioxide directly from the air and buries it as rocks deep underground to be mineralized. Usually, a natural process takes hundreds of thousands of years to turn the gas into basaltic rocks. But here, it takes up to 2 years for the CO2 to turn into white crystals.
Once the carbon dioxide is captured, it will be dissolved in water, and here we are at the injection site. The carbon dioxide dissolved in water will come through this pipe into the well, where it will be injected into the volcanic rock, at a depth of between 800 meters and 2 kilometers.
The plant is said to be removing 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. The amount is too little to save the planet from carbon emissions, as climate modeling suggests the world needs to eliminate several billion tons per year by 2050. Here we have to take into account the saying of the head of ORCA that we have to learn to walk before we can run. Legends never die. So 1 year after his death, Argentinians are remembering their hero on his birthday. And that's no one but their legendary football player, Diego Maradona. It would have been Maradona's 61st birthday this year. People all around the country, including in the capital, Buenos Aires, remembered their iconic figure in ceremonies over the weekend. In the city of Rosario, a giant monument was inaugurated in honor of the football star. You can see on your screens fans gathering there in celebration. They say Maradona's love still runs in the veins of Argentinians. One of the disastrous effects of climate change has been the loss of glaciers worldwide. People around the world are trying new ways to tackle this problem. Now, a team of Chilean conservationists have come up with a creative project to protect glaciers and prevent water loss. The project is called Nilus. Winter rains are collected in cone-like structures called stupas. Experts from Chile are using a technology that was first developed in India to make these man-made glaciers. The water is then later used in the dry summer months. Chile has been experiencing a severe drought for years. Nilus director Enrique Gilona says the project hopes to address water shortages in the country.
Here we are not creating new water. Water is something that is in nature already. It has a cycle, but clearly it has been affected by the effects of the great climate change, which we are facing. And we are looking for a solution that actually allows us to protect this water for a longer time in the mountain range, to be able to deliver it downstream toward the communities.
The goal is to store some 100 million liters of water across 50 stupas next year. This would be enough water to supply 100,000 people for 3 months. The first prototype was erected in Park Arenas, an area known for its glaciers surrounding a volcano, the highest parts of the mountain region. Researchers and activists have warned that glaciers in the Andes Mountains have been receding in recent years. They blame climate change for the loss of glaciers and water shortages. A photo on social media, an article, or a TV program can all draw attention to climate change. But to a German artist, nothing seems to be as effective as a journey using a giant wire ball to make his voice heard. Arndt Drossel started his journey from his hometown Paderborn, West Germany, 3 months ago. The trip has so far taken him through more than 60 cities. He has completed the journey to the Scottish city of Glasgow, the venue of a major UN climate conference. Drossel says he aims to tell people how they can help tackle climate change, now a key global problem. The German artist believes everyone has a duty to solve the problem to help next generations have a good future.
My wife and we have 5 children, and we want to give them a good and happy future. And everybody knows, I think, about the problems our Earth has, and we will have the same problem in several cities and countries.
The German artist says he has encouraged people to make specific promises to tackle climate change. He says his own pledge was to offset all his personal carbon emissions by using the sphere for his journey. Drossel says he will continue his efforts until the promises reach a million.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Palestinian olive farmers say attacks under the watchful eye of the Zionist regime army have destroyed the otherwise festive harvest season. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Shatta Hamad Ryder. This article is published under the heading "Settler Attacks on Palestinian Olive Harvest Most Dangerous in Years." Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. In the space of less than 10 days, Musleh Badawi and his family have been attacked 3 separate times by settlers while working on their land and picking olives. This year's harvest season, which runs between October and November, has been the hardest in recent memory for Badawi's family and other Palestinian families subjected to similar attacks. The olive harvest is a lifeline for some 80,000 to 100,000 Palestinian families in the occupied West Bank. "We were preparing for the olive harvest season as if it were a big celebration, but today's events cast a dark shadow on the occasion due to the settler attacks. If that wasn't enough, we were also prevented from reaching our fields by the Israeli regime army," Musleh Badawi told Middle East Eye recently. Badawi mentions that during the first attack on October 29th, the culprits were from the adjacent Esh Kodesh settlement. They came to the farmers' lands and stole their harvesting equipment and 4 large sacks of olives that were estimated to contain 5,000 shekels, that is $1,600 worth of olives. We informed the Israeli police and Israeli coordination and Liaison office, but they ignored our complaints when they confirmed that the settlers were the perpetrators of the theft. Badawi, 71, is a father of 8 and a grandfather to 18, and his family depends on the olive trees as a primary source of income. Despite the repeated attacks they face, they haven't left their land and remain there constantly, he said. On November 5th, we went to our other tract of land near Elia settlement, which has 50 olive trees. We were surprised to see that the settlers had beat us to the land and had already picked the trees. The Israeli regime army then arrived and kicked us out.